Class is back in session. It's time for Baptist Basics University from BaptistBasics.org. Yes, it's that time again for Baptist Basics University as we close out our Bible survey series with going beyond the canon of the Bible as we take a look at the Apocrypha. And by the way, I'm Matthew Gage. I forgot to announce that. But anyway, I appreciate you listening today. And what I decided to do when I put together this Bible survey series, I wanted to, you know, just run through and briefly touch all the books that are in the Bible. Well, that's easy enough. There's 66 books that we commonly accepted in what's called the canon. The canon is supposed to be not like a canon you shoot, but it's supposed to be like a canon as a measuring stick or something like that. And basically, those are the books that we have come to accept as biblical. Those were not the only writings of the time. And at certain times and certain places, and even today in different churches and denominations, there are books that are accepted as part of the Bible that others will reject. And the general term for that is called Apocrypha. And since we've covered... Well, one of the main reasons I want to do this is I like to keep it even with 10 lessons or 11. I don't know why, you know, 10 or 11 is kind of what I like to go for. And the original way I had this split up, it was only 9 lessons. So I thought, well, what can I do for a 10th lesson? But not to squeeze it out, but I thought, you know, if we're covering the books of the Bible, someone is bound to ask the question, well, what about this other book I've heard about? Or don't the Catholics have books in their Bible that we don't have? And you'll have somebody throw at you, like, or you'll say, you know, what about the lost books of the Bible? Or, you know, there's all those other books they don't want you to know about, like it's a conspiracy. Well, that's what I want to talk about today, is what we call the Apocrypha. Okay, let's get some basics out of the way. The word Apocrypha means hidden in its root word. So basically, these were, you could say they're hidden books, but it's not that they were kept hidden. They were just of lesser value. And these books are, in some cases, merely additions, an additional chapter or story or something to an existing book. But these portions, these writings, shall we say, that'd be the easiest way to say it. These writings are not considered to be part of the Bible. Now, that does not mean there may be some historical value to them. And it does not mean that they are, you know, just false books. But, or, you know, that they're pure fiction. Or even in some cases that they are heretical. Some of these have some good things in them. But they fall short of the standard we have for the Bible. And now it took some time as these books were being written across the centuries. And as I said, we've covered back in here, I guess the earliest books, let me scroll back up here. But if we say, you know, Genesis was written about 1451 BC, somewhere around there, all the way up to 95 AD for the Revelation. And that's not even counting in wherever you put the book of Job. You know, there is quite a time span there of time period that these books were being written, you know, that we accept as the Bible. And basically, the Jewish leaders kind of had a test that they would put these things through and decide whether or not they would accept a book as being scripture, whether or not it kind of met standards. And it's kind of hard to define those. We'll talk about the reasons why we reject these books kind of broadly. But the Jews had books that were historical, but they considered them of lesser value than what we know as the scriptures today. Likewise with the New Testament, the early church fathers really had to pare down and decide what books they were going to accept, what letters they were going to accept, you know, of writing, because there was a few other things floating around. Some of this was pretty easy because, you know, this had false doctrine or this is an obvious forgery, something like that. But it really is an amazing process, and I wish we knew more about it. We know a little and about this process that people went through in deciding what's Bible and what's not. But basically, what's been passed down to us, if you go, you know, to the Christian bookstore or the dollar store or Walmart or wherever, and you buy a Bible, the odds are it's going to have 66 books in it. Now, if you buy a Catholic book, there's some additional books, and they're called the Apocrypha. And then there's other books that go beyond that that may have never been printed as part of a Bible, but they're floating out there, and they claim to be by or about biblical characters, or maybe they are about historical events kind of in the time range of the Bible. But for various reasons, they have not been accepted as Holy Scripture. Now, I say some denominations accept some of these. The Catholic Church accepts some that Protestant churches do not. And the Greek Orthodox Church, I believe, accepts some. And if you go into this, I mean, it's very... In fact, I even saw, I think it was the Mormons even accept some that others don't. So, I mean, it really gets kind of sticky. And then some groups will put some value to them and say, well, you know, you could read this and still get something from it. And other people say, oh, you shouldn't read it because it's Scripture. Well, what I want to do in this, I just want you to learn about these so you know what they are. And that way, the next time National Geographic decides to do a special about a lost gospel and the true story about Jesus, like they did a few years ago, you'll know it's a bunch of hogwash, to put it nicely. So, now, how many apocryphal books are there? I don't know. I found a list on a website. I just searched for Apocrypha list. I found a guy. Some of these were repeated a little bit, but he had over 500 links to different books and texts and stuff. And, you know, I think some of them may have been kind of repeats a few times. And I think actually there was almost 600. So I'm just going to say there's probably over 500 various things. And some of this just may be an extra chapter that, you know, this old copy of a Bible has, you know, attached to the book of Daniel. And some of it's just a book that, you know, a text that they found that claims to be written by, Peter or Paul or James or somebody. But and then say there are tons of these books. This isn't just one or two. There are hundreds of these things of varying value and story. And well, the value is debatable to begin with. Let's look at a few types of apocryphal books. We have books that are called, boy, I'm going to apologize up front. There's some academic type words here I know I'm going to slaughter, so bear with me. We have deuterocanonical books. Those are books that are not part of the Hebrew Bible, but are accepted by some. Some of these books that are accepted, say, as by the Catholic Church, the Hebrews even rejected. And they kept them around, you know, for some reason, but they weren't considered to be Holy Scripture. Well, but they are considered by, you know, different Christian groups to be Scripture. So that's one type you see out there. Another one, which is very broad, and I'm going to blow this one. This is actually a transliteration of a Greek word, and it's antilegomena, something like that. You get the notes and you try it. And these are books that their authenticity or value is disputed, and you can go on forever with these. And we'll get on to that in kind of in our next little series of things we'll look at. But these books perhaps could be claimed to be written by a biblical character, but, you know, obviously were not for various reasons. You know, these may have been written hundreds of years after that person lived. They contain obvious false doctrine. Or sometimes it may be historically even kind of accurate, but what's the value in it? There's no spiritual benefit to it. So that's kind of that group. And then there's this is another one I'm going to blow, the pseudepigrapha, something like that. And this is what I was talking about, ascribed to an author who did not write it. This would be, you know, the lost gospel of Thomas, the, you know, the apocalypse of Peter or something like that. And probably were written 100, 200 years after these guys lived. And when somebody decided to write this, some people, you know, trying to explain this, what were these people doing that wrote those type of things? Some people, some of these guys were trying to get their own false doctrine spread. There was a group called the Gnostics that were terrible about this. So they would write a book and claim that a certain biblical character told another certain biblical character this dark secret, top secret mystery of the universe, and don't tell anybody, but write it down in the book, you know. And that's most of the Gnostic stuff I've ever looked at is along those same lines. But it could be to push their own stuff. And some people will even say that, you know, this could be early, shall we say, like fan fiction or historical novels, you know, that this was never meant to be real. They just kind of wrote it for fun. And like, okay, well, what if Thomas wrote a book? You know, what would it be like? You know, what if the three Hebrew children sang a song when they were in the fiery furnace? What would they sing? You know, that kind of stuff, you know, was added in some cases and accepted at certain points by certain people. But there's still issues with it. And I just want to throw that out there. Those are three kind of very broad groups we could kind of classify apocryphal books into. The thing is, there are apocryphal books that are historical, that are historically correct. But they can contain false doctrine or little to no value. So there's really no need to keep them in the Bible. For instance, there are, I think actually four, but there usually you see two books of the Maccabees. The Maccabees were those Jewish freedom fighters who rebelled against the, let's see, it wouldn't be the Sassanid Empire at the time, would it? But the, oh my goodness, the Seleucid Empire. Yeah, there we go, the Seleucid Empire. And you know, reestablish the Jewish state there, and kind of in that Inter Testament time, this would be like the 2nd century BC. The first and second Maccabees are historically correct books. Now you get into some doctrinal problems in them, though. But and like I say, first Maccabees, from what I know about it, I think it's a pretty historically accurate book for what it is, but it doesn't fit with the scope of the Bible. It may be good history, but it's not good scripture. So there's a reason to keep it around for historical value, but it doesn't have to be in the Bible. You know, it just, it doesn't fit the with the rest of the scriptures. Okay, some reasons that we reject apocryphal books. Number one is that historically, they were not accepted as biblical canon, as scripture, by Jews or early church leaders. This means, you know, if this book was floating around in the 1st or 2nd century BC and the Jews looked at it and said, yeah, we don't know about this one, the odds are we're not going to accept it either. And, you know, if the 1st and 2nd century AD, if the church, early church leaders kept it around, and there's some debate even during that time about what was scripture, what wasn't, and some guys would accept this, some guys would reject this. Even books that are in our Bible had some debate to them. Revelation was one of them. But, and if you study this out, you'll see guys like Tertullian and Irenaeus and Clement and different guys, you'll see them quoting, you know, apocryphal type books that are not in our scripture, not in our Bible today. And so, I mean, it was still kind of working its way out. There was a little bit of a proving process. And, you know, one of the things I think they kind of judged them by was to see, hey, you know, if time will last, does this have lasting value? But if the early Jews or the early church leaders did not accept a book, that's a big mark against accepting a book as scripture. Number two, they often do not claim inspiration. They usually will not say things like "Thus saith the Lord" or "The word of the Lord came unto so and so." It's a lot of them are first person or just stories, and a lot of them, they just flat don't claim that level of inspiration that other books in the Bible do. Third, they often contain false doctrine or heresy. For instance, when we get into the book of the, talking about the Maccabees, some of those books contain things like praying for the dead. Which do we see that in the scripture anywhere else? Absolutely not. That, you know, we actually see that kind of thing taught against. So why would we want to accept that in our Bible and contradict, you know, the rest of the scripture? There's plenty of other instances of this, especially when you get into the later times where you had like the Gnostics who were trying to push their teachings into the church. You know, they would wrap it around a historical figure and try to push it in. But that's one reason we flat reject a lot of apocryphal books, is just because when we look at what they teach, it does not measure up with the teachings of the rest of the Bible. Fourthly, kind of an artistic point, they're of lesser style and beauty. And I have read a few. I can't say I'm an expert, but I have read things like the Book of Enoch. And they really do. They just do not carry the beauty, the style in the writing, in the language, in the message. There's something missing there. In a lot of cases, the books were discounted. It may not be utterly rejected, but they were just discounted because they just weren't that great of a read. And then fifth, some are just pure fiction. There's no way the stories in them happened, because they may be heretical, or it just, you know, there's no historical basis for this book having been written at the time, and it was probably written centuries later and thousands of miles away. And, you know, as I say, some of these are just pure fiction. And so that'd be like, you go and you watch a lot of John Wayne or Roy Rogers cowboy movies, and you go back to the Wild West. The cowboys didn't operate that way. You know, they didn't ride those big pretty horses and have nice clean Stetsons on. You know, being a cowboy was dirty work, and they were the scum of the earth. They weren't, you know, the Gene Autry, everybody's hero, and all the little boys looked up to him. I mean, there was actually stuff printed. I think I remember seeing something printed in a newspaper, like a Tombstone, something about they wanted to shoot him on sight. You know, I mean, that's just how bad they were. So anyway, some of these books are, as I say, just pure fiction, and you know, just by simple judgment, we've come to that conclusion. So we discount that book completely. And, you know, some of them have been carried around or kept alive for historical reasons, you know, preserving what this group taught, or maybe just for laughs. And some of these books have even only been found in the last 100, 200 years. And, you know, as people have been digging around looking for old texts and find these buried in, you know, some vault or in a library, a monastery somewhere, you know, and find some of these things. And in fact, one of these I was looking at was just found about 150 years ago. And, you know, and the text they found was like from the 3rd or 4th century. And they've heard, you know, people mention it, but they had never found an actual text of it. And they found one, you know. So that also kind of goes to show you, you know, if it was really that important or that great, it probably would have propagated a little bit more too. Okay. Next, I want to look at some broad kind of groups of different apocrypha. I really wish I could just go through and deal with each book and kind of what's going on in them. I don't really have time to put that much effort into it, because I really thought about doing that. When I found out there was hundreds of these books, and I really couldn't even decide, boy, how do I pick this one and that one? So, you know, I'm just going to give you some broad overview of different types of apocrypha. In the Old Testament, we have historical books, and these cover historical events. These can be like the books of, you know, the Maccabees, 1st, 2nd Maccabees. And this is where, you know, a historical book can be of value. It could be correct, and it could be authentic. It just may not be scripture. There are other ones that add on to, you know, historical events or rewrite historical events, but we would classify that as historical. Next, there's legendary, and these are just like tall tales. You know, if you think Paul Bunyan and Pecos Bill and Johnny Appleseed were great tall tales, wait till you read some of this Apocrypha. Next, we have apocalyptic. And this is where we deal with, these are like the visions of the end time. Think about the book of Revelation on steroids. And that's what you get with these apocalyptic books. And it's doom and gloom and the end of the world. And those were extremely popular, evidently, in Judaism. So there's a bunch of those out there. And I'm going to blow this word, too. There's didactic. And these, that just means teaching. These are teaching or proverbs. And there's quite a few of these. And like I say, even some of these I looked at would be collections of like proverbs by a rabbi. And they would historically correct. That's, you know, it's authentic, but it's not scripture. New Testament. Here's some different types of New Testament. There's the Gnostic text. And I really wanted to get more into this, but the Gnostics were a heretical group that popped up really after the, I think you're talking more like 2nd, 3rd century with these guys, but they tried to blend like elements of cosmology and the secrets of the seven stars kind of things into Christianity, and part of it was also trying to bring in this Greek philosophy stuff also. And what these guys did was they wrote their own supposed books of the Bible and tried to get them propagated to spread their own heresy. And there's a bunch of books that fit this category that we have found, that they're found dozens of these types of books. And as I say, the general formula is, you know, biblical figure one takes biblical figure number two aside and says, hey, I've got this deep, dark secret for you. And it involves the seven stars or something along those lines. And then from there, it just goes downhill. It makes no sense. It's the word the esoteric was the word that I saw on Wikipedia describing it. Esoteric cosmology, and almost always has something to do with the sun, the moon, the stars, the, you know, the planets, something like that, in their own form of ethics. And I'm not well-versed in the beliefs of the Gnostics, but there are a lot of Gnostic books that claim to be scripture, claim to be by, you know, biblical figures, but they're not. They are much later. They are fraudulent books. There's also additional gospels, and these add to the stories about Christ or add some of his teachings or sayings even. A very popular version of these is trying to fill in that, you know, silent time in his life, in his childhood. There's books that were written about supposedly his adventures in Egypt and the things that, you know, he did. And very fanciful. If you want, I mean, there's stuff about like him making, is it butterflies or birds out of clay and then making them come to life and flying. And once they're sailing down the Nile and a big boulder falls down and he's just a small child, but he reaches up his hand and stops the boulder. And the left his handprint in the boulder, and they would worship that site years later. I mean, this is crazy stuff. Does not fit with the Bible at all. Next, there's additional epistles. And a lot of these are supposedly by apostles. That's debatable in a lot of cases. See the Gnostic texts for information on that. Some of these are also are legitimate. But they are by like the what we would call the early church fathers, apostolic fathers, the next generation of leaders after the apostles, guys like Clement and people like that. And some of these are historically accurate, and some of them are good books, but they're not considered scripture. And we kind of separate them. I got a little point later I'll probably get to on this, but we separate that out and say, okay, the Bible cuts off with the Revelation in about 95 AD, and the stuff written after that is something different. And there is some value to it, and there is some good stuff there, but it's not scripture. And then there's also apocalypses, you know, these visions of the end times, and just like with the Old Testament, it's, you know, the doom and gloom, end of the world kind of stuff. Okay, there are, I believe there's 15 of these. apocryphal books that are in the original translation of this of the King James Bible. And I wanted to bring these out because this is a pretty good list just to illustrate what's going on. Now, all of these are considered Old Testament apocrypha. And a lot of these are all of these are accepted by the Catholic Church. And they were translated by the translators of the King James Bible. They were separate in between the Old Testament and the New Testament. And, you know, they've kind of dropped out. And they were actually put there. And I think there was even some type of notice. And a lot of these early Bibles, like the King James or the Geneva Bible, these would be included, or some of these would be included. And there would usually be some type of note that just says, hey, these aren't scripture, but, you know, you might get something out of them. Or, you know, they're here for their historical value, or to fill in the, you know, the 400 silent years in between the two testaments. So I'm going to run through and just kind of tell you what all these are about. We have 1st Esdras and 2nd Esdras. And these, the 1st Esdras is basically a reworking of Ezra. It's kind of a rewriting of Ezra. 2nd Esdras is an apocalyptic book, supposedly by Ezra. And I've added that word in here a bunch, supposedly, because I can say that about all of these. Supposedly, this is what this book really is. At face value, that's what it is. But if you dig down into it, yeah, it's, this 2nd Esdras probably wasn't by Ezra. Yeah, it was probably written much later. And linguistically, we might can even prove that it was never written in Hebrew. It was originally written in Greek and crazy stuff. You know, we can go crazy with it, but we're not going to. I'm just going to just, you know, I'm just telling you what these books are. Next, we have the story of Tobit, and this is maybe the weirdest one to me I've found. It's about a guy who was a Jew in Nineveh, and yeah, he ends up going to Media and marrying a girl who has a demon, and yeah, it just goes downhill from there, and it involves the archangel Raphael that, you know, we've never heard of except for in this book. It's crazy. Tobit goes blind because bird droppings get in his eye, and he goes blind, and he sees, anyway, it's crazy. Now we have the story about Judith, who is a woman who ends up killing an Assyrian general, and a lot of people do claim that one to be just flat out fiction, fan fiction, you could say. There's additions to Esther. The Wikipedia article calls it Rest of Esther, but it's just additional elements, a little bit more story added to the end, and a proclamation, further text on it and stuff. So that's added. It's also a book called Wisdom, and this is a collection of maxims and proverbs supposedly by Solomon. So just think of it Proverbs Part 2. We have the book of Ecclesiasticus, sometimes called by Sirach. This is a collection of maxims by a rabbi. And I say, even that one, I've seen the early Christian leaders. I think it was John Bunyan, you know, was motivated by one of the things and reading it. So, you know, it's not scripture. There may be some good maxims, you know, good proverbs you could use. You know, we all quote proverbs that aren't, you know, little maxims that are not scripture. But anyway, that's there. And that one supposedly is probably historically correct. It probably is from a little bit I read. Next, we have the book of Baruch. We'll go with that. And that's the guy who was Jeremiah's scribe. And this book was supposedly by him. And then we have the Epistle of Jeremy, or Letter of Jeremiah, or Letter of Jeremy. It's done, but it's supposed to be. It's actually kind of the final chapter of the book of Baruch. And it is a letter to the Jews by Jeremiah. And next we have the Song of the Three Children. This is an additions to the book of Daniel. And particularly prayer and song, supposedly by Abednego, when they were, or Azariah, if you want to go by his Hebrew name, when the Hebrew children were in the fiery furnace, and some interaction with the angel that showed up, which I believe is Jesus Christ, but the interaction with him. Then we have the story of Susanna, which is, deals a little bit more centrally than other books. It's a story about a woman who is basically black, two guys tried to blackmail her into having an affair with them. She runs away, and Daniel, through his wisdom, clears her name. But it is, yeah, it's kind of a very strange book. Next, we have Belle and the Dragon. And this is a couple of stories also about Daniel. And these are kind of additions to Daniel, the book of Daniel. And this is one about an idol, him proving that an idol was fake and really wasn't eating the food that was sacrificed to it. And also an encounter with a dragon that the people of Babylon worshipped that he fed something to and killed. And yeah, it's strange. Okay, also we have the Prayer of Manassas, and this is supposedly a prayer of the wicked of the king Manasseh. Wasn't he wicked? I think he was very wicked. Manasseh, supposedly, repenting of his sins and stuff. So that's added. Then we have the first and second Maccabees, and as I say, those first Maccabees is pretty much historical account, historical record. Second Maccabees gets in a little bit more. There's some bad theology when you get into it, but those are the story of the Maccabean revolt. And there's also some Pharisee type doctrine and positions that are in there. So that's the ones that if you find in a real old edition of the King James Bible, those are in there. And that just kind of gives you an idea. I hope that just gives you an idea of what these books are about and how crazy some of these stories can get. All right, and lastly, I've got just a couple here I want to throw out there just because they're common. You'll hear about them a little bit more than some of these other ones, even more than these ones that are, considered the Apocrypha, proper Apocrypha, that actually is accepted by, the Catholics and the Protestants reject and all that. So here's some other books you might hear about. One is the Book of Enoch. I have actually read this one, and it's crazy. It is quoted in Jude, in the book of Jude, verses 14 and 15, quote this book. And the quote, I think, comes out of the first chapter of the book of Enoch. It supposedly was highly respected by the Jews. It deals a lot with angels. Enoch makes some trips to heaven, deals a little bit with Noah being born, and Noah, when he was born, according to this book, his face glowed and they had to put a veil on him, and it gets pretty weird. But because it is quoted in the book of Jude, I'll just throw it out there that, that's what it is. Another one you hear sometimes talked about is the Shepherd of Hermas. And these are supposedly prophetic visions by a shepherd, and different groups like this book, and evidently a lot of early church fathers liked it. It's very vague and allegorical in how it deals with things, so it's really kind of open to interpretation. I tried to read a little bit of it; it made no sense to me. It's gained some popularity back in recent years. I remember reading Gail Riplinger's book, New Age Bible Versions, like the name of it. Now, not hugest fan of that book, but she talks quite a bit in there about the Shepherd of Hermas and points out some stuff. I think it was that book I read. I'm pretty sure it was, where she talks a little bit about that and some of the New Age kind of stuff that was in that book. That's part of the reason why it's coming back popular. Another one, because it got a National Geographic special, The Gospel of Judas. This piece of garbage was a Gnostic gospel. And it's one of those where Jesus takes Judas aside to impart the legendary knowledge of the seven stars and the secrets of the planets and the moon and everything else. We don't actually have a full text of this. If you look it up, I don't know if the page is still up on National Geographic's website. I'm pretty sure National Geographic. I hope I'm blaming them correctly. But I looked it up, downloaded the PDF of it. Vast portions of it are missing. It's not a very good text, and there's very few copies of this thing that have survived. And it is so obviously a Gnostic forgery that it's not even funny, but the National Geographic put out this special saying that, oh, we found this lost book of the Bible, and oh, it sheds some light on the true story of the Bible. Like there's a conspiracy that the Bible we have is trying to keep the real truth out. It's like some kind of Da Vinci Code kind of conspiracy thing going on. Listen, I read the thing. It's garbage. The Gospel of Judas is pure garbage. And what they were really keyed in on was not all the Gnostic cosmology kind of stuff. It was in there that, you know, to kind of, I guess, justify that Judas is writing a book, they actually have Jesus going to Judas and saying, look, buddy, you're really my friend, but you have to betray me. Don't worry about it. Everything's okay. You just have to do it, you know. But here, if you'll do it for me, I'll tell you all these deep, dark universe secrets and stuff. So it's, as I say, garbage, trash, but it got a lot of play when it came out a few years back. And so that's that. And I hope I expressed my opinion enough on that, that it is garbage. Thank you. Okay. And then lastly, I want to throw in that there are a lot of books by the early church fathers that are sometimes included. First and Second Clement, for instance. But because these kind of date into that next generation of church leaders after the apostles, we basically push them back into a different realm. And sometimes these people are called apostolic fathers or early church fathers. Guys like Tertullian, Clement, Irenaeus, and dozens and dozens of other, Justin Martyr, if you want to go a little bit later. A lot of these guys wrote really good things. You can buy their stuff. There's collections of these guys writing. There's Philip Scoff actually has, it's like the Anti-Nicene Fathers and the Post-Nicene Fathers. I mean, just, it's like dozens of volumes of books of these guys' early writings. And some of the people he includes were heretics, in my opinion, but it's this early Christian writing that's been collected, and you can find a lot of that stuff for free online. It's kind of difficult to read. It's a different style. They're definitely dealing with issues we don't deal with today, and you know, it's a little hard to follow. I mean, if you're really looking for something spiritually edifying outside of the scripture, I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend them. More for historical study, or, you know, if you want to study historical doctrine, you know, the development of a doctrine or something, they're pretty good. But I never have found them to be just real great reading. You may be different than me and really, really enjoy it. But I find that a lot of the ancient writing, I don't know if it's just something's lost in translation or what, but I usually don't get just a whole lot out of them. But anyway, that is the Apocrypha. I hope that you've made it through with me on that, and I hope that I've made it make some sense, because there's so many books I can't deal with them all. But I hope that you at least understand what these books are out there, and just understand, if nothing else, there are reasons why these are not considered scripture, and it's not a conspiracy. These books have issues, and some are better than others. Some, honestly, you know, for historical study, like Maccabees or something, that might be a good book to read if you just want to know about the Maccabean Revolt. But for the most part, don't waste your time. You're not going to find deep, dark secrets and the hidden story about Christianity that they don't want you to know. It's not there, okay? These books were considered less than valuable by the Jews, the early church fathers, and I agree with them. In every case I've ever studied out on it, they made the right choices in not accepting these as the scripture. Of course, that's denying the supernatural aspect, that the books we have are the books God preserved for us and are inspired, and you know, he helped lead these men to cull out the ones that we didn't need and weren't inspired. But I'm telling you, from what I've read and looked at, they made the right decision. So, but anyway, there you go, the Apocrypha, and we are done with our series, our Bible survey series. I'm thrilled to have another series under my belt. And actually, as I'm recording this, I'm actually ahead. It's going to be a few weeks before anybody even gets to hear this, which is good because I'm going to start working on our next series. So, which I haven't quite decided on. I think I know what I'm going to do, and it's going to be kind of a historical study, but we'll see. We'll see when we get there. I may need to take a break. Anyway, I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. Check out BaptistBasics.org for other resources. You can click on the podcast icon. Check out the other Baptist Basics University lessons and the series I've done. You can check out the Baptist History Spotlight courses, or the Baptist History Spotlight podcast that I do, which is just little short, like 3-4 minute biographical sketches and stories about Baptists. Like Baptist Basics on Facebook. There's Twitter at Baptist Basics, the email podcast@baptistbasics.org. And that's it. That's another series done, complete, fine. I'm Matthew Gage. I appreciate you listening today. I hope it's been a help and a blessing to you.